Welcome to Editing Aloud with a collection of South Africa's best journalists telling you about the news of the week. Guys, the big news in the last couple of days, I suppose in a macro sense, is GDP growth. The figures came out this week, which showed that for last year, 2018, we had growth of 0.8%. Sikonathi, to start with you perhaps, you know, 0.8%, this is actually less than we had the year before in 2017 of 1.4. What happened to this whole Ramaphosa thing? Why didn't that work? Why did we have a slowdown compared to the previous year?
Well, and the population is growing at
2%. And the population, 2%. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyone who knows anything about the economy and business knows that you don't just switch on a button and then everything starts flying. My hope is that that was the base, and from here onwards, then we really start chalking up growth to, at the 3% level at least. But we know what is required, and of course, Ramaphosa is just one man. You still have the same government, you still have the same policies, except corruption is now not as really almost officially acceptable as it was before.
No, not really, almost.
So there's hope. My hope is that indeed after the election, the election should really give him a clear popular mandate to go ahead with the proceed with the reforms, and the growth should then follow. Whether that happens or not is a different story altogether.
Ron, that's a controversial thing that Sikonathi just mentioned. You see that view propounded by a lot of people, that we should vote for Ramaphosa to strengthen his hand. But should you be rewarding the ANC for what it's done in the last couple of years? You know, and also another factor in that discussion is it's not just one man who makes up the ANC.
Yeah.
But before you go, I did not say vote for Ramaphosa. That's just correct.
Yeah. I mean, I guess with, yeah, they should be punished, I guess, for the poor performance of the past 9 years. Just to what extent will be. But I get when, you know, was it a couple of weeks ago, we were with one of the mining CEOs, and he's saying for their sector, they want to back Ramaphosa for stability in the within the, because the mining charter was settled well, right? So it's almost like big business is happy with the new dawn. But for growth reasons, I think the consumer is very much under pressure more than we ever imagined, right? It's like you can see a Financial Mail's front page stories about ShopRite, the rest, and Woolworths, and all of them. You can see the pressure of the South African consumer, and we are about 60% or so of the SA economy. So it's the South African consumer, which generally is not bullish about the about their prospects, and that's what the ANC will find out just how bullish they are on May 8th, right? And so that's I think that's the big reason why the economy is fine. But I guess for big business, they're very happy to have Ramaphosa there. Stability, he's talking their language. But as we said, it's still the ANC. Yeah.
So what is, you know, I've heard some figures mentioned in terms of what it will take to improve the economy to get to the supposed mandate given to Ramaphosa. Is that 60%? Is it 58%? What is it?
I mean, within his party, he needs to get a sizable increase from Jacob Zuma. It can't go worse than what Zuma brought in 2014, and especially 2016 in the local government elections. So he has to outperform Zuma to get the stronger hand within his party. If he has anything less than those, the faction that's scared about all these commissions are going to be much stronger, a stronger plate going into the next NGC and the next elective conference. So he needs that. And if we think outside of Ramaphosa, all the other actors aren't strong enough, I guess maybe we are kind of invested in that he gets a stronger mandate, because if we think about Morsi and these competition within our political theater, if you have faith in that, I don't have much faith in the rest, and him maybe to an extent.
Yeah. Jana, in terms of getting back to the GDP numbers, I mean, the one sector you imagine would have grown leaps and bounds would have been the legal fraternity, thanks to the commissions that Ron mentioned. But yeah, a couple of sectors did very badly last year. Yeah. Agriculture went down 4.8%, I think it was. Mining and construction got absolutely decimated again. Yeah. What does that speak to? Does that speak to the fact that the policies in those specific sectors are struggling? We have land affecting agriculture.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think we mustn't forget that large parts of South Africa still were facing a very serious drought. So on agriculture, hopefully that we'll see those numbers starting to improve. But I mean, fundamentally, South Africa is still very much a mining-driven economy. You know, mining really drives other important sectors like manufacturing. We mustn't forget the impact of Eskom, the fact that we actually don't have enough power. So we can sit here and talk all about the politics, but the fact of the matter is, if you don't have electricity and security of supply, pricing at an affordable level, you know, we're not going to see massive investment and significant growth. That is the reality of it.
But isn't that then a risk to signaling what you were saying, your growth projection of 3%? I mean, surely, you know, you're not going to fix Eskom even this year. It's going to take a while to do that. And then you have the land policy, which is still going to keep hurting our agricultural sector.
To be sure, we are definitely not going to get anything near 2%, let alone 3% this year and even next year. But we really need to be at those levels. At least beat the population growth. That, I would think, would mean things are stable. As is now, we're going the other way around. So what we need is certainty. The election result could be interpreted any other way. So he gets, Ramaphosa gets a strong mandate, as Ron suggests. Thabo Mbeki got more than two-thirds majority and got fired by the party. If Ramaphosa got, or the ANC just managed to hang on to 51% of the vote, that would really light a fire behind their bums and get this country working, because they then would know that this, it's not a God-given right that they will always rule over this country. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, they can do a ZANU-PF on us, which I don't think is beyond them. Certainly that faction of the ANC. Mm-hmm. So we need growth, but we really need to test the ANC in the election, and it needs to feel threatened.
We talk about mining, Yanni, you speak about mining as a backbone for the economy, as it has been for years. Mm. One of the things happening is there's massive labor issues, specifically Sibanye. The gold mines, I think, have been on strike since November.
Yes.
And Sibanye is the last sort of major mining house, I suppose, exposed to gold here. What's actually happening there? I mean, where is it at now?
So there's been a lot of violence and intimidation. I think Gwede Mantashe was there yesterday asking for intervention from the police to really try and improve the security situation. I think 9 people dead so far, and the strike started in November. And a number of houses being burned down. I think there's been a number of cars and things being burned down. So it's really been a very volatile situation, and I must say, very underreported by the media, actually. It's a disgrace on all our names that we haven't been on the ground there a lot more, talking to people there. From what I understand, you know, the strike started. AMCU actually made the regional office made a list of demands when in the wage talks. Most of those were actually, you know, the company agreed to. The other unions did sign the agreement, so AMCU is not, there's a dispute about how big their membership is at Sibanye. So that is a thing, you know, a fight that's going through the labor courts and CCMA processes at the moment. But from what I understand, the national leadership, Joseph Matundwa, then said, you will not sign this agreement, even though the regional leaders were happy to do it. And they've been on strike ever since. And I think, you know, it's also an indictment on the process. You know, should we have a legal system that allows for workers to go on strike for 4 months without getting paid? I mean, this is severely damaging to the workers. Mm. Nobody wins. Sibanye, since...
Except maybe Joseph Matundwa.
Yeah, well, that's also debatable, because I think the standoff between him and Neil Froneman, you know, Froneman also doesn't, you know, Sibanye doesn't want to back down either now. So you have the standoff between two very strong personalities. Nobody wants to lose, and the people who are losing are the workers. And, you know, and it's putting thousands of other jobs at risk, even though Sibanye will say those jobs are not at risk because of the strike. I mean, it's a logical, you know, conclusion to make. So nobody wins, and you have two massive egos fighting. And nobody wants to blink first, but at some point something's going to have to give. And you know, the question is this Joseph Matundwa's last roll of the dice? If they lose this strike, how much credibility does the union lose, and what are the ramifications across the mining sector?
So Ron, your thoughts on Yana's question. I mean, should people be allowed to strike for 4 months? And if you look at the GDP figures we just talked about, what extent can the mines afford to meet the demands? Are they just being bloody-minded? Is it just an ego thing, or...?
I mean, Fordham's can't afford to meet the demands of the mining. But also, I think he's very protected by what's happening on his palladium and platinum business. So I think he's very comfortable by that, and that's why Joseph had been asking for a sympathy strike across all operations. He knows, okay, fine. But I mean, those operations, Kloof, KDC, I think, you know, when I think about it, maybe they should have been closed a long time ago. There's a reason why Goldfields dumped them in Sibanye's lap, and from that, Froneman was able to build this empire of mining companies. But I mean, it's almost a bit of realism in South Africa, on, especially with regards to gold. And those mines are old. There's a reason why no one wanted them. And consolidation is almost over in the gold mining sector. And Sibanye is sitting with it. And Froneman, as we all know here, is a bloody minded individual. And he's willing to go. He's fine to like keep them unpaid for 4 months, 5 months, in case maybe.
It's devastating for families.
It's devastating for families. But he holds strong. It's almost like it's him versus Mutunjwa in a sense. And he almost can bring in there. There's Gwete, who was also a former Num guy, who was actually not quite on the same side as Mutunjwa automatically. So there is kind of a battle there that could turn very ugly, but I think maybe Marikana's lessons almost, hopefully, that placates everyone. But it's a hard battle, and maybe in truth, we have to have a hard discussion about gold mining in this country, particularly those labor-intensive ones, where it's ridiculous why they're still open, right? These mines, and hence, that's why a foreman can survive keeping those mines closed for this long.
Sikhmati, do we not need to have a hard discussion about unions and how they operate in this country? How does this end?
Well, the end will really be bad and nasty. Look at it this way. The employees, the difference between what the company has offered and the other unions have accepted, and according to Sibanye, those are the majority union, it's 300 rand per month. That's the difference between what the AMCO wants and what the company has offered and what the other employees are getting already, those who are at work. 3,600 rands a year, and they are losing basic wages of about 12,000 rands a month. Now, to the maths, they will never recover. Their counterparts in Rustenburg, in the Platinum Belt, 4 years on, have still not recovered from a five-month strike. Where will this end? I do not know. Joseph Mutunjwa continues to get paid because he's employed by AMCO and encouraging people who keep him employed to go unpaid. So it's, again, a strike is a constitutionally enshrined right in this country. We can't limit them to 4 months or 2 months. How does it end? I don't know.
But it's because people don't seem to have the interests of the workers at heart. It's primarily the egos, right? Is that
definitely, they don't seem to have the interests of the workers at heart, and the workers themselves don't know what is good for them. Let's face it. Mining in this country is for the uneducated, is for the illiterate. I'm talking about the labor. So you and I can really easily compute these numbers and decide, I will forego 300 rands and accept what my employer gives me over the next 4 months or the next 12 months and not have to suffer for 3,600 rands. They have no idea. They're just asking for 10%, 12%, whatever that is.
Guys, one of the things that happened in the last week, which is significant, is Edcon got a bailout, a long-awaited bailout package that they've been talking about for months. Jana, in terms of what it means, I mean, Edcon is this brand that has been synonymous with South African retail since 1929, but it completely hit the skids after 2005 with this private equity deal. What are the basic terms of this package?
So basically they're getting about 3 billion, just less than 3 billion. They're getting discounted rents for the next 2 years. And the UIF and some of the big property companies have put in some cash and then discounted rent. Grant Patterson believes that that's going to be sufficient to turn around the business. But I think we should also not forget that in 2016 they did a massive debt to equity swap, which the previous CEO also believed was going to be the thing. You know, this is our balance sheet is now well positioned to turn around this business, and we haven't seen that happens. So I think their problems are certainly, the financial breathing room is there now, but their problems are certainly bigger than just finances.
Just before we get into that point, I mean, does it not set a bad precedent to be bailing out retailers, bailing out companies that should be allowed to fail in the system? I mean, companies should fail, companies should survive. Why should the PIC, for example, be investing government pensioners' money in this company that has been so frail for so long?
I'll address that just now, but the most important point on Yana's issue here is that these guys make operating profit. Then the debt wiped out all of that cash. Now, with this deal, they will have absolutely no debt, no interest-bearing debt. Everything has been converted to equity. That, more than at any time in the past 10 years, gives Edcon the best chance ever. Who wouldn't want a 41% discount over 2 years on their rent.
That's we'll take 41% discount on our bond if we could.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So this absolutely, if they cannot make it work now, then the company does not deserve to exist. Why should the PIC invest? This is the unemployment insurance fund's money. Now, everybody that participated in that deal, it is in their absolute interest to do it, including the UIF, because the 40,000 people that work there, should Edcon hit the ground, be liquidated, you've got 40,000 people knocking at the UIF's office demanding payouts, and the UIF has said, okay, let's keep you guys employed, we'll take equity in your business, you better work very hard. So that's a great deal. It's not the PIC's money. Let's repeat that. So you cut off the queue of people unemployed, another 40,000 people who would otherwise go to the UIF to claim money. They have now been given at least 2 years to keep going at work. And Edcon has already said there will be no massive retrenchments. They will just move people around offices and they will obviously shrink their business. In that way, Edcon is quite too big to fail, particularly in this economy. Hmm. It employs the 40,000 people. It gets 44% of its products from within South Africa, and South African Clothing and Textile Workers Union says this is the biggest supporter of the local manufacturing industry in fashion. So you've got not only the 40,000 people, but hundreds of other thousands, depending on Edcon.
Okay, it's a good argument. It's a good argument.
Well,
but Ron, I wanted to ask you, I mean, the thing with Edcon is, so they had this big deal in 2005, I think it was, Bain Capital came and bought them out, big private equity deal, $25 billion. And then they had the skids. They couldn't afford to pay the debts, like Ron said. But, I mean, the thing is, had they not got that massive private equity deal, Edcon, as a business, would it still have hit the skids? Because the department store model that they built themselves on was always kind of frail in this environment. You look overseas, guys are going bust all the time. Yeah. And then you have Cotton On, you have Zara, you have new guys. I mean, would they not have always faced a bit of a identity crisis at some stage?
Yeah, I think so. I think ever since SAB Miller dumped them, when was it, like 90s? And I mean, when there was this boom period when Steve Ross took over as American CEO, and it was a great business, but all he did was just source goods from China. So it was cheap goods, and it looked prettier, and then hence the Americans came in. But I think Edgar's is a long, dying business, and I think the whole... And I agree with you, the president will be setting about bailing out. I think Edgar's will be back here again at some point. I just look at Edgar's as a business, I can't see it trading itself out of the position it's in. It's antiquated. That business it hasn't changed much. It pretty much reminds me of David. When I read about David Jones, I haven't been to Australia. When I read about David Jones and I think it's Mayors in Australia, pretty much in the same position. Large, big scale box retailers just don't have a future going forward. And I don't think there's actually anything structurally that has changed in Edgar's to tell me that it's a new business. It's the same Edgar's I grew up going to in Church Street, in Pietermaritzburg all those years ago. And in Grant Patterson, the current CEO, he's not really a retailer, right? He's an engineer and he's a great finance guy. He knows how, I mean, he sold the whole idea to Walmart that Massmart is a great buy, when actually Walmart should have bought ShopRite. Was that a grocer type of thing? That was his claim to fame.
I almost want to say poor Walmart.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think he's the retailing guy. I mean, he isn't a Mark Lamberti or any of these other doyens that have long gone, have long retired. So Edgar's people, when we're sitting here, Edgar's looks like it looks in the 1980s or 1990s. There's no structure, actual change to that business, and it just keeps shrinking further and further going down. So, I get your argument means about 40,000 jobs being saved and the context of the country we live in and the fear of this whole implosion of Edgar's. But, I mean, there's some point, like gold mining, we have to sit down and say, what pain do we take to restructure the SA economy? Like, and this is, not exist in
future.
That's
capitalism. Like, you know, businesses are supposed to die and businesses...
And it's ugly, right? It's going to be ugly when it dies, but from its ashes, something else will emerge from it. And maybe the fear is what will emerge from it. But I think maybe from its ashes something may emerge from Edgar's.
And Yana, do you, I mean, I don't know if you shop at Edgar's, but do you think...
I try to, but they make it very difficult to shop there. I mean, I think that is one of their big problems, is their merchandise. It's just, and even if you go to C&A, for example, you look at what a business like Typo has done with what was CNA's bread and butter, and it's a completely different experience. So it's exactly what Ron says. It's exactly the same as, you know, I went to the Edgar's in Craddock, and it's exactly the same. And there's,
so it doesn't have a reason.
And I haven't become more fashionable, but neither have they.
I mean, like, exclusive books has taken part of that. CNA used to have like books, right? Yeah. So exclusive books have taken that business away, and then you have Typo, the rest. They've just eaten into that. Big juggernaut of a retailer, and it sits there. It's an anchor tenant in most malls, so but people aren't going to it. So okay, that whole anchor tenant argument when it comes to Edgar's isn't working, and they have these high rents, hence they have this 40% cut in rents. Probably need more than that. But it's just one of those stores that is
Look at Stutterford's dying. Yeah. I mean, do anyone miss them? Do you find the
More than is
empty? Or, no, but I mean, there are no empty spaces where Stutterford's used to be. I agree with Ron. Yeah. I mean, sometimes these things have to die, and you have to give room to more innovative, more creative competitors that might not get a foot in the door now.
Let me differ. I beg to differ, my colleagues.
Bring colleagues. Yeah.
The issue of saving Edcon with the retailers who otherwise are exposed to about 10% of their lettable space to Edcon, you then have the textile manufacturing companies all relying on them. So there needs to be a payback. The one way you can get Edcon to work for all of South Africa is pressurize them to increase their procurement from South Africa. They are already high at 44%, but guess what? Edcon was this brand that supported local products like your Kelso, who were manufactured.
But imagine this: if Edgar's fails, right? Like Edgar's dies. At least I'm not wishing the worst for the 40,000 people, right? If Edgar's fails, all these malls rentals, don't they change? Like also other smaller guys will get cheaper rentals, right? Because so maybe there's a change of the whole ecosystem, the whole pricing of rentals and so on for other guys to benefit. Maybe smaller retailers can find a space in a mall.
Ron wants to go open a bazaar shop in a mall.
Yeah, look, why not? Like, but the point is like this domination of Edgar's and continued like support, life support we're giving it to it. What are we actually? Who's losing out in the end? This $3 billion that's been raised to give to Edgar's, who's losing out in the end? We have to really think clearly about that. And maybe there's an argument.
But what about? I mean, the fact is, Edgar's. I mean, is the problem, Yana, that it just doesn't have a compelling management? It doesn't have a reason to exist anymore. It's lost its way. So you don't know what you're buying in Edgar's. You don't know why you go in there.
Well, that's one of the things that Graham Patterson says that they're going to fix. You know, they moved away. Who was that German CEO they had who brought in all these like really high-end brands? I mean, nobody goes to Edgar's to buy a 4,000 rand pair of jeans, you know. And they kind of lost their way a bit in terms of offering value, you know, kind of just run-of-the-mill stuff, but it's good quality and it's not expensive. And I think they're trying to some extent to get back to that. But the problem is also how many of us are going to go back there to try and see what they've got now. You know, you kind of lose customers. It's very hard to get them going back through the doors again, unless you have money to spend on marketing and doing innovative stuff and, you know, bringing in South African designers or, you know, but, you know, if you don't have cash, maybe they'll have a bit more room to play with now. But, I mean, it's going to be very hard to get that brand to a point where people see it as exciting again.
Woolworths is almost saved by its food business, right?
Yes, completely.
Yeah, Woolworths clothing was always like hit or miss, and even it was for old people stuff, that kind of thing.
But they still get food through the door. Yeah, because you walk through the clothes.
Exactly,
to get to the food,
right? Yeah. So maybe in Edgar's rethinking over the past 20 years, someone should have thought maybe Edgar's is due for like a Woolworths makeover. If there was food inside of Woolworths, then maybe a person would walk into it and then pick up their clothes. I don't know. But it needs that reinvention of what the hell big box thing is. Right?
And they lost 22% of their market share in fashion. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, how do you do that unless you're so busy worrying about the debt that you completely take your eye off the ball? Yeah. So I suppose it's getting their eye back onto that ball.
Yeah.
Just one last thing, just to wrap up the show. The election is a couple of weeks away, as Ron mentioned. We talked a bit about the ANC and whether you should give Cyril his 60%. Figures from the Institute of Race Relations, their new polling numbers, suggest that the ANC is currently on 54.7, down 1 or 2%, which is quite a bit below Ramaphosa's 60%. DA is now 21.8, up 3% from December, and the EFF on 12.2. Jana, I mean, that still falls far short of the 60%, right? Is that a good number, a bad number? I mean, what does it say?
I'm leaning towards Sikonathi's view on this. I think the more competition, the better for all of us. But I understand the argument that we want stability and you don't want to get to a violent situation where people are fighting a ZANU-PF, MDC kind of fight where there's a real risk of losing power and you just do anything in your power to hang on to it. But, I mean, frankly, for me, they just all... It's just so depressing, right? Who do we vote for? I mean, there's just nobody out there that's really inspiring, that's really bringing something new to the table, that you can really trust to make any significant difference. So I'm afraid I'm very indifferent towards the political parties, and I don't have much sympathy for any of them. I feel they can all be getting a harder time from all of us.
I don't see a ZANU-PF play out yet. I think they'll... What we're going towards, coalition politics, the ANC will play coalition politics. But my biggest fear in coalition politics, what will ever happen in this country? Like, what will we do?
Okay, guys, that's a wrap. We're still a democracy. So keep tuned next week for the next edition as we head towards that election.